From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. And along with your calls, some interesting topics to talk over, Zorba?
Yes, the FDA is looking to regulate some health apps. Now, which ones should be regulated? Why are they regulating them? Do they have the power to do it? We're going to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're also going to talk about this boy in Texas, this teenage boy in Texas, who died from fire ants biting him. He had an anaphylactic shock, severe allergic reaction. We're going to talk about EpiPens, epinephrine pens, and whether or not they ought to be in schools.
Mm-hmm. Interesting stuff. What's our recipe?
We've got a recipe from the vault. It's vegan pizza. And if you love pizza, you will love this recipe. It is delicious. I promise you that.
That toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. And to the phones we go now, Zorba, with a listener in Palatka, Florida. Hi.
Hi. How are you all today?
We're great. How can we help you?
I have a question about sodium, but I wanted to say that my wife and I gave up processed foods. I'm a 66-year-old adult male. I've dropped 35 pounds.
Wow.
For years, I struggled to bring triglycerides down, and this just did it, and certainly a testament to giving up processed foods with their high sodium count.
That's great.
I eat tons of good fruit, vegetable, nuts, grains. Mm-hmm. I eat all meats except red meats. So I do get the sodium, but many days I come in at 700, 800. Can that have any negative effect on me, given the fact that for the first time in my life, I feel great?
Wonderful. So first of all, let me congratulate you on that weight loss. And I think what you've discovered is it's not – you didn't lose the 35 pounds because of the sodium. You lost the 35 pounds because foods that tend to put on lots of weight tend to have a lot of sodium. And our society has become addicted to salt. We are salt addicts. And
absolutely.
What has happened is we have lots and lots of salt. We need about a teaspoon and a half of salt a day. And it's not that we need it day in and day out, because our body has reserves. And so the issue with low sodium is not really an issue in our society because we have sodium everywhere. And so I wouldn't be concerned if one day you're getting 750 milligrams and the next day you're getting 1,500 milligrams because your body's going to adjust. Over time, it's just if you're eating a good diet, you're going to get plenty of sodium. The thing about processed foods is they have sodium, they often have fat, and they often have sugar, and they often have calories, and we can just go on and – You've noticed a couple things. For many, many people, not everybody by any means, they're salt sensitive. So if we cut out sodium, we cut out their blood pressure. And we can either cut their pills in half or reduce them from 3 pills to 2 pills. And for some people, if they lose weight and they exercise, they may not need pills at all. Now, one recommendation I have for your blood pressure, if you were on pills before, which you were, I would recommend you get an automatic blood pressure cuff that you've got it at home, and you got to spend.
We have two of them, Dr. Zorba, and we have been using them religiously. Yes, sir.
That is, and just monitor. It's not if you have to even monitor it once a week. You know, just every couple of weeks. Every couple of weeks, take your pressure to make sure it hasn't gone up. Once a month, I'm against people becoming neurotic about their blood pressure and measuring it every day. But just be aware because it's possible you may need pills in the future. But if you need them, you will need less. And you have done everything right. We should follow your lead. That's what we should do.
Thank you so much for the call.
And thank you so much for your call. Keep up the good work and give my best to your wife.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413.
You know, the thing about him is that here it is. He said, I've got to put a handle on my life. I'm going to cut out sodium. So he's lost 35 pounds, which is awesome. He doesn't have as much salt that he's eating, which is awesome. And he feels better. And the issue is, if you lose weight and you taper down and you eat right, you begin to feel better. But you've got to have faith and optimism that it'll actually happen. And that's why a lot of people, you know, don't take their step, because they don't realize they will actually feel better.
Hmm. To the phones again, and a listener in Vernal, Utah. Hi.
Hello, how are you doing?
Fine, how can we help?
Well, I had a quick question, or background story, I guess I'll give you first. My daughter, I have a 5-year-old daughter, she was born with bladder atrophy, so the bladder was on the outside of her body. And as a result, she's had a lot of kidney damage and kidney issues. And we were recently told she was going to have a kidney transplant sometime in the future. And so I would like to, as her father, you know, be able to put myself in a position to, assuming that I'm a match, put myself in a position to be able to give her this kidney. What I'm wondering is, what can I do now? I mean, it'll be several years down the road, but what can I do now to prepare my kidneys for the future to be able to do this for her?
Got you. In other words, you want your kidneys to be healthy enough so you can give one to your daughter, which is
exactly
just what you do. And I, you know, like they said, you're going to need one. You may want to find out whether or not you're a match, but you know, I don't know if they'll actually go through that process prior to that. They do it. It's an expensive process. They do it when they're actually looking at that. So the way to keep your kidney healthy is to, number one, keep your blood pressure under good control. So I assume you do not have high blood pressure. What's your blood pressure? You have any idea what it is?
You know what? I don't know. I've never really had.
Yeah, so, you know, you're a young guy, you're a young father, chances are your blood pressure is good. Blood pressure is an important thing to keeping kidneys under control. Cholesterol is another thing for having a good kidney, making sure that you eat a diet where your cholesterol is basically a good cholesterol. The bad cholesterol is below 130. Total cholesterol, 200 or less generally. So keeping your cholesterol under control is really good. Exercising, just general body health is good. And the other thing probably is making sure that you don't have, and it fits in with our previous caller, that you don't overdo sodium. Because sodium, we know, produces high blood pressure. And sodium has to be basically filtered by the kidney. The kidney does a lot with sodium every single day, works really hard keeping sodium under control. So I wouldn't go on a low-sodium diet, but what I would do is I would eat less processed foods, and I would shoot for a teaspoon and a half of sodium a day. That's what we do, of salt a day. And the way to do that and figure out what foods you need to eat or not eat is basically it's processed foods, things like soups and other things that you buy generally have a lot of salt. And I would just say, hey, we're going to cook a good natural diet, and that natural diet is going to be good for my daughter. The other issue is trauma. You know, anything that could produce trauma to the kidney. I don't think I would engage in rugby. I don't know if you're a rugby player.
Right, okay.
So trauma. But those are the things to do, and you're going to keep your kidneys well. And, of course, any parent would do exactly what you're doing. I mean, any parent would say to their child, hey, take my kidney. And how old are you?
I'm 31.
So you're perfect. You know, you would be, if somebody needed a kidney transplant, if your daughter needs a kidney transplant when she's, we'll say, 15 or 12, when she's, received her full height, you would be a good match, and your kidney is just going to be a good match for her. You know, if it turns out to be a match when they do something called the HLA testing for that. So how's she doing right now? Tell me about her.
She's actually doing awesome. We actually just got back from the hospital yesterday. Mm-hmm. She had a big reconstructive surgery on her bladder and everything, and she's doing amazing with that. She's a trooper.
Uh-huh. How old is she now?
She's five.
So she is a trooper. She is a trooper. And sounds like you've got good medical care, and it sounds like you're great parents. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Sure.
My pleasure.
Thanks so much for the call. Now, Zorba, you say a teaspoon and a half of salt. I've heard that. Mm-hmm. Heard you say that a number. We have no idea when
no,
we get to
not
a
at all.
Teaspoon.
But not at all. It's just kind of a visual way of thinking of it. But I think the way to do it is, let's assume you take out processed foods. You just don't eat them, okay?
Right.
It's not easy to stay away from, but it's easy to define. Well, then the question people have is, well, how much salt can I have if I want to salt my food? So the answer is, don't put salt in the food. That's answer number one. Don't put salt in the food, because most of the salt we get is from salt. It's not from the sodium in the food. And then if you are going to use salt, put a little salt on the surface of the food, which is where we taste it, and you will have less salt. And instead of taking a salt shaker and just putting it on, dribble it with your hands, with your fingers, because you'll use less salt. If you take a shaker and put it on, you'll use more salt.
Really?
And those are just tips. Sure, because you go like that.
Interesting. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. We'll take our next call, Zorba, after we talk some about the FDA's possible regulation of some health apps.
Right. Well, first of all, the FDA has been looking at health apps for some time. You know, which ones should they regulate? Which one is kind of the nanny state? Hey, we don't want our health apps regulated. Which ones can be dangerous? Can there be something dangerous to the public?
For us Luddites, what are we talking about here? Health apps.
Well, first of all, even if you're a Luddite, Tom, you watch enough television to know an app is on the television.
Yeah, I know apps, but it's health apps would be just giving you information.
Mm-hmm. Well, it might be giving you information. It might be checking your pulse. You know, you have a little connector to your pulse, and you plug it into your phone, check your pulse. That's a health app. Mm-hmm. It might be diet. That's a health app. It might be keeping track of your exercise. The FDA is not talking about that. They're not talking about health apps like diet and exercise and that.
Okay.
They're talking about apps that attach to an ultrasound. Let me give an example. Ultrasounds are expensive, but you can now buy a dumbed-down ultrasound for $1,000, $800 to $1,000, and you can look. Let's say you're pregnant. You can look at the sex of your baby, but you need an app that may be actually looking at that, and so you purchase an app for a few dollars on the phone, and you connect the ultrasound through a connector to your smartphone.
Yeah.
The ultrasound analyzes the ultrasound is then analyzed by the smartphone with an app, and it says something such as, you have a male baby, or you have gallstones, or you've got your fallopian tube is enlarged. That's what the FDA is talking about regulating. Apps that are associated, for instance, with medical devices that could cause harm. So let's go back to the ultrasound for just a second.
Sure.
I do a lot of medical work in India, and we have an ultrasound that we bought for the hospital that I help. It was a good ultrasound. And you cannot get an ultrasound in India unless the hospital has been looked at, regulated, and you sign a pledge that you will not abort a baby because it's not a male baby.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big issue in India. It's a big issue in China. They have a lot more male babies in China. They're 5%.
Right.
It's 55% or 60% male versus 40% because there's infanticide going on because it's a girl baby. The FDA they have the power to regulate that technology, such as ultrasounds. So they now say, we have the power to regulate the app that's associated with medical technology that we regulate. It's not calories. It's not diet. It's not let's boom, boom, and get ourselves healthy. It's medical technology they're talking
that's
about.
That's interesting. I understand the desire of the FDA to get a control on this, but what you're getting is information. And is it really right for us to keep people from getting information?
Well,
they may misuse that information, mm-hmm. but
you bring up a really good point. And that's why the FDA has sort of looked at this for the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. And I followed this for about 3 years when they first declared that they may be regulating apps and haven't been able to come up with the rules that they think can apply to this, because you're right. You don't want to interfere with information that people can get. On the other hand, if that information then is harmful to you, should you regulate it because they regulate other things? And I think the answer is because they haven't regulated any apps yet.
Yeah.
I want to see what they actually want to regulate. Yeah. I'm really on the side. I believe in the ubiquitization of information, that information by definition is good, and I don't have the right to keep people away from information. That's always on the side that I've been on, which is why I'm not against advertising on television. I'm pro-advertising on drugs on TV, even though it may cause a lot of consternation in a doctor's office. That's a good point with that. And so I haven't seen it. They haven't decided which ones they want to regulate. Let's see what the rules
Interesting
are.
Interesting ethical issues.
Absolutely.
800-462-7413. And a Knoxville, Tennessee listener joins in now. Hi.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having me.
Sure. What's up?
Well, this question is actually concerning my son. He is almost 20 months old, and he is a biter. He only bites me, though. Well, no, that's a lie. He mostly bites me. He bites my mother and my sister, but not so much males. He does not bite my husband, his father, and he doesn't bite, you know, any other males he comes in contact with. He just bites me. Mm-hmm. And I did some research on my own. I studied child psychology at UT, so it's really interesting to me. I was trying to solve the problem myself. So I looked online, and I saw that 85% of mothers, pretty much, they say to bite them back on the tips of their fingers or the tips of their toes. Obviously say, no, this hurts, do you see? You know, this don't do this. So I did that, and it took 24 hours of me biting him back when he bit me for him to bite me and then present his finger to me for me to bite. So I'm at a loss. We've done timeout, but he's so young that I don't know if timeout really gets to him yet.
I love it.
That we I put him away. I say, no, I'm not going to play with you. You bit mm-hmm. mama. Do not mm-hmm. do that. I tell him that it hurts. Mm-hmm. And I explain to him. I get down on his level. I look him in the eyes. But still bites, and it hurts. Mm-hmm. I've got several bruises all over my body.
Okay. So I have a couple of suggestions. First of all, I love it. Your child is obviously highly intelligent and has figured out in 24 hours, hey, it's time for you to bite me. I like it.
Before you give advice, Sorba, I have some advice.
Please. Please.
Bite him harder.
Bite him harder.
He cried a couple times, but then
he still gives you the finger.
Yeah. He still gives you his finger. I didn't say that. I knew you were saying he gives you the
finger.
That's it. I was looking at that. I knew that was on your mind.
Okay. Back to the show.
Okay, so if we look, there are a few things that work with kids. So we'll talk about timeout, which I think is part of this, and what you're going to do otherwise. So what you really want to do is you use positive reinforcement of when he doesn't bite you. And the way to do that is to – there's something that he likes, probably in a two-year-old, that he likes to eat, like a little spoonful of ice cream, something that you know, or a piece of cheese, whatever you find, or part of a cookie, not a large amount, a small amount. And what you want to do is when he goes an hour without biting, you give him something. You say, look, you went for 1 hour without biting. That's really good. And then you want to go for – then you want to do that for like the first day. Then the next day, you wait and you move it to every 2 hours. And then you move it to every 3 hours. Then you move it to every 4 hours. And you keep on reinforcing the non-biting attitude. That's what you have to do. In other words, you want to say, look at it. I love you. Look at what you did. You didn't bite. That becomes your game. In other words, your game with food becomes the non-biting. Now, when he bites you, I believe fully in timeouts. Boredom is the worst thing for humans. Humans hate boredom. So you take a timeout, you put him in a room for a two-year-old. Generally, for a two-year-old, it's, you know, probably 3 to 5 minutes. It's somewhere in that realm.
Okay. You know, I have heard a minute for every year.
A minute for every year. But for our kids, and I raised four perfect children who never gave me any problem, right?
Right.
Yeah, it wouldn't be 20 minutes. But generally, you know, 2 minutes, it's almost not worth putting them in there. Right. I put them in for 5 minutes. And then when they come out, they're often usually crying and they're upset. And then I would remind them and then go immediately back to the positive reinforcement. You know, 1 hour later, he doesn't bite you. Here's part of your cookie. 2 hours, you know, you didn't bite you. We're going to go 2 hours. Here's another cookie. In other words, you want to use the timeout in minimal reinforcement. And when he gets out of timeout, don't pay any attention to him at all. Let the door open up. But when he comes in the room and he wants to hug you, go away from him.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's what you do. In other words, it's boredom. You had timeout in the room, but I'm not playing with you. You know, because you don't want to make it into a game. I get time out for 5 minutes. You're dealing with a highly intelligent human being who I recommend you immediately sign up for Harvard College, because that's the type of material that he is.
So. I'll do it. Thank you.
Thank you. And do let us know what happens.
Very
do
good.
Let us
know. I will.
Very, very good, Zorba. The program is Zorba Pastor on Raising Kids.
800-462-7413.
And before a quick break, Zorba, let's bring out the gavel for another round of Judge Zorba.
Woohoo!
Today we have a question from Carrie in Red Lodge, Montana, who needs your help settling a marital dispute.
Oh, I love it. I love
it. Carrie says, my husband insists that one cannot catch the same strain of cold or flu twice. I'm not fully convinced, and this has turned into quite a debate in our house. I'm curious as to what Zorba's opinion is on this.
Quite a debate in the house. So I'm picturing two people sitting around the kitchen table having coffee. One saying, I'm not going like that. Something like that.
Over this issue? I don't think.
You know what? You never know. You never know.
Yeah.
The answer is, if you've got a good immune system, then you are going to be immune to that virus, and you're not going to catch it again. However, the answer is, if you have a bad immune system, if you're on a steroid that will reduce their immunity, or if you're an older adult who just doesn't fight viruses very well, you might get that viral infection again. So it turns out this is a plus for both of them.
They're both right.
I agree with both of them. They are both right. I have solved their marital problems. Congratulations. Here's my gavel. I agree with both.
They're both right. You don't want to lose a listener under any circumstances.
You got it, Tom. You got it.
Is a disagreement putting a strain on your relationship? Just send your debates along to the judge in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
More cold advice coming up a bit later, by the way, with today's medical myth buster. Well, coming up next, we'll have our recipe. It's a recipe from the vault. More of your calls, of course. Some more interesting research to talk about in our medical myth buster, too. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. But before our next call, recipe time again, Zorba. And as you know, from time to time, we like to put the spotlight on a recipe that was a past favorite in a segment we like to call Recipes from the Vault. Today's vault recipe for vegan pizza was first sent to us from Oregon, Illinois listener Mara Dale. Mara sent us this one a long time ago. So let's have a little fun here, Zorba, and see how good of a recipe historian you are. When this recipe first aired...
Okay, I'm ready. I'm listening. I've got my thinking cap on, and I'm thinking.
Lance Armstrong won his first Tour de France. The popular television show The Sopranos debuted. And Doctors Without Borders won the Nobel Peace Prize. Can you guess the year?
Da 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 da.
I'll give you some time on this, Zorba, to think it over while we go through today's recipe for vegan pizza.
Let's start out with the crust. Okay, 1.5 cups of all-purpose flour.
1.5 cups all-purpose flour.
Do you know why they call it all-purpose flour?
Because you can use it for a bunch of stuff.
Excellent. Excellent.
Insightful. I'm really bright.
Spot on. 1/4 teaspoon salt.
1/4 little tea salt.
2 tablespoonfuls extra virgin olive oil.
2 big tea olive oil.
1.5 teaspoons of dry yeast.
1.5 little tea dry yeast.
By the way, that's a package. That's basically a package of dry yeast. And if you're going to use a lot of yeast, you want to go to some place like Sam's or Costco and buy yeast in these large containers. They are so much cheaper. I bake a lot of bread, and that's what I use. We're going to use some warm water. 1/2 cup of warm water.
Okay.
In that too. Okay. In our sauce, 6 ounces of your favorite tomato tomato sauce. It may be homemade. It may be a tomato sauce that you purchase, but your favorite.
Mm-hmm. That's 6 ounces of it.
Half teaspoon of dried basil. If you've got fresh basil, you're going to use probably about a tablespoonful of chopped up fresh basil.
Okay, half tea basil.
Half teaspoon of oregano.
Half little tea oregano.
A clove of garlic.
One garlic clove.
Here's our topping. One medium acorn squash or a couple of small Hubbard squashes.
A medium acorn squash or two small Hubbard squash.
Yeah, and that's what you serve this. But basically, we want to have, you know, the equivalent of amount of squash. You could use zucchini. You could use a yellow squash. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There are a whole bunch of other squashes. Do you like squash?
No.
No. Oh, well, this recipe is not for you.
I guess.
Are you a vegan?
Good one. Actually, I'm eating less meat these days.
Right. Even your edgicable.
That's right.
Even the carnivore of carnivores is edgicable.
Yeah.
There we go. You want a jar of marinated artichoke hearts. That's an ounce and a half jar. That's a small little jar of marinated artichoke hearts. You want to slice them up. Save the oil.
Okay.
Okay. Two garlic cloves chopped. This is our topping.
Two garlic cloves chopped.
Medium onion, whatever you have around the house, but I use a red onion because I like it, like the way
medium
it looks.
Medium onion.
Couple of cups of mushrooms.
2 cups mushroom.
Half cup of olives chopped.
Half a cup olives chopped.
Could be green, could be black, whichever one you want to use. Mm-hmm. And 2 cups of crushed tomatoes.
2 cups crushed tomatoes.
Now, doesn't that topping sound good to you?
No.
Okay, so let's start again.
I don't like mushrooms either.
Let's start up. Let's continue. Yeah. Let's continue with
this.
Okay. Some of our listeners will like this recipe.
I'm sure most of
those who only eat meat, please turn off the radio and go make a burger somewhere.
Yeah. Okay.
So in the crust, let's do the crust first. In a large bowl, mix flour, yeast, and salt, the dry ingredients. Then you add water. Then you add the oil, stirring to mix with a sturdy spoon because it's going to be nice and stiff. Mm-hmm. When the dough leaves the side of the bowl, put it on a work surface, knead it as flour until it's stiff and dry. Stiff but not dry. And then you're going to leave it for about 5 to 8 minutes. I highly recommend, if you've never done anything with flour of this, go to YouTube, put down pizza dough flour knead, K-N-E-A-D, and you will see a wonderful video that'll tell you how to do this. And we'll put a YouTube video, we'll connect on our website for how to knead dough at zorbapastor.org. If you go to our website, we'll connect this on our website. Okay. Turn into a lightly oiled bowl, making a complete revolution around the bowl so the oil is side up. I often put a little bit of oil on top of the bowl. Loosely cover it with plastic wrap or a clean damp cloth and let it rise in a warm place until it's doubled in bulk. Now, what I do when I want flour to rise is I turn on the oven. I leave the oven on for about 3 to 4 minutes. Then I turn the oven off and I shove it in the oven. And that turns out to be a warm place, and that works out really well. Mm-hmm. Okay, now you're going to knead it briefly, spray a 12-side pizza pan with vegetable spray, and roll out the dough. Then we want to prepare the sauce. In a small bowl, add the tomato sauce, the oregano, basil, garlic. Mix it well. Set it aside. Okay, that's the sauce. Now the topping. Scoop out the seeds of the squash and cook it or microwave it until tender. You might decide to steam it. You might decide to microwave it. Spread the crust out in a thin layer. And then you want to put a nice layer of cooked squash on top. Then spread the prepared sauce over the squash. Top with onions, mushrooms, garlic, olives, and artichoke hearts. Dribble the artichoke oil on top and then bake at 400 degrees for 10 to 15 minutes. Sprinkle with the tomatoes afterwards and serve it. It is delicious. Absolutely great.
Are you done? I stopped listening at artichoke hearts, mushrooms, and olives.
You stopped at those points?
Yeah, of course.
It's a delicious recipe.
Anyway.
You love it.
Anyway, the year. Lance Armstrong won his first Tour de France. More information.
Okay.
The popular television show The Sopranos started.
Okay.
Doctors Without Borders won the Nobel Peace Prize.
1998.
You're close.
Oh, really?
You're very
really
close.
Really good. Really?
February 1999.
Oh! That's really good.
You get the prize.
That's really good. I got close. You want to know which ones of those I realized? As
Doctors Without Borders, I'm
no,
guessing.
No, not at all. The Sopranos.
Oh! You don't even watch that much television.
You know what? I watch The Sopranos.
If there's a recipe you feel deserves an encore performance, let us know about it, and it might just end up being our next recipe from the vault. Don't worry, you don't need to know the original air date. Simply send the name of the recipe in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast. Search all your favorite Zorba Pastor on Your Health recipes and see beautiful, fantastic pictures of Tom and I. You can look and become our fans. All you have to do is go to ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, we're on Facebook.
+1 800 462 7413. And our next caller, Zorba, is a listener in Beaver Dam, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. What I was calling about was more a comment than a question. Mm-hmm. I listened to a previous show, and you were discussing the downside of sitting at your desk all day. Mm-hmm. And I work in a large company and, office complex with all the cubicle things. And several years ago, I got a hamstring injury, and so the doctor said it's best not to sit. So I had them help me design a stand-up workstation. And though I got a lot of odd comments, people are really interested now, and about 10% of the office staff have stand-up workstations.
Wow.
Yeah, and they're, like engineers. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just we're a broad, range of people. So it works great.
That is something. That's really quite something. I've had a request over the last probably 6 months from two people that work at an electronic medical records company that's around Madison called Epic. Great company. They produce great software. Mm-hmm. And both of these people had backaches. And so they asked to have a stand-up work desk in their office. They still have a sit-down work desk, but they do a lot of their work at the stand-up work desk. And just having that ability to switch, because these are programmers, so they're working all the time at their computers, made a big difference in their back.
This is a pretty dumb question, yeah. I guess, but don't you get tired standing up?
Well, I have the option to stand up or sit down.
Right.
And then we're a factory, mm-hmm. too, and so we have mats. Mm-hmm. So we have gotten cushioned mats, so when you stand,
huge.
It's a very, cushioned,
huge.
Area. Mm-hmm. And then again, if you want to sit down, again, with the era of laptops, yeah. it's very easy to move your computer from the stand-up position to the sitting-down position, mm-hmm. though a lot of people stand up all day.
Well, and that's exactly it. I'd rather and it's comfortable. It's also now I'm going to go one step further on something I can't picture. They now have stand up workstations with treadmills. So you can,
we've heard that, and somebody had said in one of the corporate offices they have that you actually walk as you work. To me, that seems hard too. But
they'd have to pay me a lot of money.
It's one of the offices. It's the corporate offices. They do get paid a lot of money.
really well. And like I said, at first you get a lot of stares, and then as more and more people do it, it really has caught on.
Well, thank you. Thanks for phoning us, and I'm sure that our a number of our listeners are going to learn about it. I've got to look up these stand-up workstations with a treadmill, too. But anyway, congratulations. What happens is you've got to be able to sit down and stand up. And one of the docs at our clinic, I happen to see him, and he's had two or three back surgeries, and he's got two workstations in his office, sit down and stand up.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
So,
thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Hey, Zorba, there are broadcasters who work standing up.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Well, I know. See? So it's not.
I think
it's
some
not uncommon.
It feels like they get more oomph in their voice.
They get more oomph, yeah, so yeah. They can project more. Yeah.
We should try that?
I kind of like my chair here, Tom. Makes me nice and relaxed.
Me too. 800-462-7413. Well, now that we're standing up, why don't we belly up to a Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page and take a question from a listener named Eric, who writes, "Dear Zorba, I'm not a big drinker, but I do like to have a little when I go out. I am a type 2 diabetic, and my last couple blood tests have shown a little bit elevated liver function. I'm wondering, as long as I go easy, is it okay if I still have a little alcohol? Thank you in advance, and I love your show."
Well, a lot of liver function tests, these are tests that measure kind of whether or not your liver is stressed. They can come from a bunch of different things. Very, very commonly in diabetics, they have something called fatty infiltration of the liver. And that's where they're overweight and there's extra fat in the liver. And it causes an irritation, and that's what's often causing the elevated blood test. So I think the important thing here is to find out what's causing the elevated blood test and how elevated is it. If it's only minimally elevated, a glass of wine, a glass of beer is probably not going to bother it. And if you want to be super cautious, you have some wine and beer and you repeat the test and see whether or not it affects it. But I think it's important if you've got an elevated liver function test to find out why it's there, commonly caused by being overweight. But my guess is if that's what it is, a little alcohol is not going to bother you. 1 to 2 drinks a day, 14 drinks a week, not taken on Saturday night at the same time is basically the way to look at this. Just not too much stress, a little bit should be okay.
If you have a lifestyle question for the show, post it to our Facebook page or just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have some interesting research to talk over, some more of your calls, and, of course, our medical myth buster right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number is 800-462-7413. But, Zorba, before we get back to the phones, we talk about EpiPens after that tragic death of a Texas boy.
Yeah, it was tragic. So here you have a boy, 13 years old, playing with his teammates. It's in Corpus Christi, and there are fire ants around. And he starts yelling, ants, ants. So we don't have fire ants in Wisconsin, but I know what ants, fire ants are. Yeah. And they bite. And he got bit, and then he collapsed. No history of allergies before.
Yeah.
Had what's called an anaphylactic shock, which is like a shock. It's a severe allergic reaction, and he died. He died in the children's hospital, and he had no previous history. And if you look at venom deaths from ants, in wasps, hornets in the country, there are about, between any particular year, 250 to 500 venom deaths that occur in the country. And then the real issue is if he had an EpiPen. An EpiPen is a very easy way of getting adrenaline into your body.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very simple to do. You take off the cap, you punch it in, and you push a button. You know, just like you were with a fountain pen. It's sort of a self-injector. It's incredibly easy to use. If that were at the school and somebody came up from the school and put an EpiPen in him, he would still be alive, probably.
Yeah. The issue is what? We want to require the EpiPen?
Well, it's rather interesting. It's not require. It's sort of allow. And there's a mandate. Should it be in the schools? And then it's allowing it to be in the schools. Now, I was head of our EMS, Emergency Medical Service, in Oregon when it first started a gazillion years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the big issue with the state of Wisconsin is you had to have special training to give adrenaline so we could have adrenaline on the ambulance. That was before the EpiPen was invented. You had a open it up, know how to take out a syringe, you know, pull it up and have it. The fact is these pens are really simple. And what they ought to do is they should say these ought to be in every school as an emergency kit in someone's office because then it can be used. Is there a downside? Pretty rare. I mean, the downside is so minimal compared to the upside.
Yeah.
And you're giving it to kids in school. So the chances they're having heart disease are like a gazillion to one.
Yeah.
So
how long would it take for the person with the EpiPen to save the life of someone?
Well, the quicker you get the adrenaline into the body, the more likely you are to save it. Undoubtedly, the ambulance had it when the ambulance arrived. But the ambulance was 7 minutes later.
But then could the person in the school get there in time? Probably.
Well, it wouldn't be 7 minutes. It might be 3 minutes. It all depends on where they put it. If they put it in a safety box where everyone knows where it is and anyone can run to the box and pull it out, it's going to be short. If they put it under lock and key in the principal's office, forget it. But EpiPen should be mandated in every school in the country. It's simple training to use it. We should have it for our children. It's public safety.
1-800-462-7413, toll free. And Zorba, our next caller is a listener in Lafayette, Indiana. Hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
So my question is about a fission tolerance. So I, over the last 8 years, have developed a pretty severe intolerance to eating fish. I used to eat fish all the time. And now, if I eat it, about an hour after I eat, I get a pretty severe stomach ache, and it lasts for up to 2 or 3 hours. And the weird thing is I can eat raw fish, so I eat sushi pretty regularly, and I can also eat like a tuna salad sandwich without any problem. So it's really just like grilled fish or fried fish.
Mm-hmm. So we have to look at fish, and it sounds like it's fish specific. So, I mean, when you eat sushi, there's certain things you're eating salmon and other things that doesn't bother you, and tuna. So when you're eating fried fish, is it a different fish?
No, I can, like you said, I could eat sushi with salmon, but if I eat a grilled salmon, I would have this reaction.
So salmon that's kind of raw or lox you can eat, but grilled you can't eat. So is this salmon you get in a restaurant, you mean, or when you're preparing it at home?
I've tested the boundaries many times.
It sounds like it. It sounds like it. So, and what exactly is the reaction that occurs? Do you sweat, or what sort of intolerance?
No, it's just a pretty severe pain in my stomach, but it takes about an hour or so to develop.
So afterwards, you get a pain. Is it a burning pain? Is it a sharp pain? Is it a stabbing pain? What kind of a pain is it?
It's a dull pain, but it's pretty, it's very noticeable. But it doesn't feel like a stabbing pain or anything.
So it does not feel like a stabbing pain at all. It's a dull pain. And no sweating, no red face, no blushing reaction, nothing of that nature. What have you tried to do to keep it from happening? Anything other than avoiding those foods?
No, really just avoiding cooked fish.
And other cooked foods do not bother you at all?
Nope.
So, and when you've tried the salmon, as you can see, I'm trying to get to the back of my brain to find something. When you've tried the salmon, I'm trying to find a pattern. You've tried different kinds of salmon, like teriyaki salmon or lemon-crusted salmon or peppered salmon. I mean, could it be the spice that's on the fish?
I don't think so. It doesn't seem to really matter the preparation. Even if it's sushi that's been sort of heated, sometimes they flame the top of the sushi, that will cause the reaction.
Oh, that is so interesting. I mean, I don't have the foggiest idea. let's start out with that. You have stumped me. I have not the foggiest idea. I can't blame it on spice. Yeah. I can't blame it on the type of fish. Yeah. I'm trying to find a planner. I can't blame it on anything. I can't blame it on you either. So I'm stumped with that. So the next question, now that I'm stumped, what would I do to try to see if things are better? So I'm going to hit first on the allergic side, that there's something strange from an allergic thing. And what I would do is before I would have fish, I would try a few sample things that you know are causing you bothersome problems. I would take 2 Claritin, over-the-counter Claritin, 2 Claritin, or 1 Zyrtec, or 1 Allegra, and I would take it at least an hour before I ate, but you could take it 3 or 4 hours before you would have your fish, and I would take that and see what happens. If that's the case, then you've got some funky allergy, and it's a histamine reaction. And this is helping. That's what I would do as number one. Now, let's talk about number two. Number two, I would say something's going on with the gut, and there's some excess acid that somehow is happening with the protein in the fish. There are different proteins. Protein is denatured when we actually heat it up, and I'm having a reaction to it with the fish. So I would go the fact that there's some gastric acid issue, and I would have 2 Zantac, 150 milligrams. So I would take 300 milligrams of Zantac at least a couple of hours before I had the fish. And I would see if that's the case. And then number three, let me know. I'll do some research. Let me know, because you have stumped me. But those are 2 things that I would try to see. Allergy on one hand, acid on the other hand, to see what it could be.
Great. Well, that's really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Very interesting. And obviously you like fish.
Would you like our new producer, Carl Christensen, to screen the callers so that we don't get any calls
where
you don't know the answer?
Not screening. It's Stump the Doc. People always say, what's the most unusual call you have? And I go, it's news to me. Now I know. It's cooked fish versus sushi. I can relate to that.
Before we get back to the phone, Zorba, let's gear up for another medical myth buster. This one comes to us from David in Massachusetts. He asks, Dear Zorba, when I was in my youth, I would frequent the YMCA. During the winter, my mother used to tell me that taking a cold shower before going out into the cold would close up my pores and help prevent catching a cold or the flu. Is it true?
I don't think it's true at all. The idea of a cold shower when you live in Wisconsin is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of. I can just imagine. I really want to keep from getting a cold. It's wintertime and it's 5 below 0. Yeah. I think I'll take a cold shower. I think I'll take a cold shower. My mother would say to me, get your head examined. That would be about what it is. I don't think there's any credible evidence that a cold shower does anything. Now, in the middle of hot weather, it's hot and it's humid and you want to get cooled off, well, by all means, take your cold shower. But if you want to prevent getting a cold, use a little Purell on your hands and stay away from people. Never go into an elevator. Never go into a crowded room. Don't kiss children. If you're working with children in daycare, give up your job. That's the way to prevent colds. But a cold shower, forget it. It's a myth.
Have a myth for Zorba? He's ready to deliver the cold, hard facts. Just send your question in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And our next caller, Zorba, is a listener in Ada, Oklahoma. Hi.
How you doing?
Fine. How can we help?
I have an Achilles tendon on my right leg that's driving me up the wall, and I've been to the doctor. I've done the stretching that he tells me and the heating and cooling packs, and this thing just still hurts, and it hurts to walk, and I favor my leg, and I don't know what to do. So I listened to your show, and I said, I'm calling those guys if I figure it out.
Yeah, I'm really glad you called because I've got the same problem, and I just don't want to ask Zorba.
You've got the same problem. And you don't want to ask me.
I was waiting for a caller to call. Now I'm listening for the advice.
What other problems do you have? What other callers are we waiting for? So you've got, how long has it been going on that you've had this Achilles tendon problem?
3 months, probably.
Okay, 3 months.
About a year and a half or two for me, by the way.
I'm talking to the gentleman on the phone. You'll just have to hang on with that. Anything you did that actually started it?
Zorba, not that I know of. Uh-huh. I didn't fall off or jump on anything. Uh-huh. And I run heavy equipment is what I do, so I'm not really on my feet that much. But uh-huh. It started hurting one day,
uh-huh.
And it hasn't let up at all.
Okay, so where is it? Describe where your pain is. Is it at the ankle part, or is it the bottom of the foot? Where is it actually present?
It starts at the heel.
Starts at the heel. Okay.
And it goes up probably 6 inches or so, it feels like.
Okay. When you're home, when you're around the house, you walk around barefoot?
Sometimes barefoot, tennis shoes, slippers, just whatever I'm doing.
Okay. I have a couple of suggestions. Are you taking, by the way, an anti-inflammatory at all, naproxen or ibuprofen?
I was taking ibuprofen, and I was taking a leave, try to knock it down a little bit.
But you were taking it on a regular basis or just when the pain bothered you?
No, I was on a regular basis.
Okay. I've got a couple suggestions for you. First of all,
okay.
Number one, you are not to be barefoot around the house ever unless you're showering. Okay, you've got to wear no house slippers. It's got to be a shoe with a heel. Now you can wear Crocs, or something of that nature, but no longer barefoot. Very important to have cushion when you get out of bed in the morning. First thing you do is put your Crocs on, walk around the house. Critically important when it comes to an Achilles tendon. It may also be plantar fasciitis, which is where you've got this foot pain with the heel where you walk. That's number one. Number two, I recommend for the next 4 to 6 weeks that you take 2 Aleve tablets twice a day, come rain, come shine. The next thing I'd recommend is taping your ankle or your Achilles tendon. And we're going to put this on our website on zorbapastor.org, and we'll put down a link for how you can do taping with athletic tape. And the reason is sometimes taping an ankle can be very, very useful. And this is white tape. You can buy it in sporting goods stores where it's cheaper than in drugstores. And I recommend taping it for 3 to 4 weeks. And what you do is you can actually wear the tape for 2 to 3 days. When I do this, when my ankle bothers me and my foot bothers me and I've had Achilles tendonitis and plantar fasciitis, I will tape it. And I usually leave the tape on. I shower with it. I leave it on for 3 days. And if you tape it, it changes the way the ankle and that works. So that's three things that you can do. Not barefoot, anti-inflammatories, tape the ankle. I'll find it on YouTube. We'll put it on the website, and that's where you can find it. We'll let you know. That's what I would recommend. And you'll get over this, but those are the three things you've got to do. And let me tell you, walking barefoot is the thing that's continuing to make this thing worse and not get better.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize. Okay, great.
Thanks.
Oh, yeah. Thank you guys very much.
And thank you for listening. We've got a lot of wonderful listeners. We're really popular in Oklahoma. I've gone there several times to speak, and I love the people there. They're just the friendliest people in the country.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to do two of those things that you just told our caller to do. I don't want to bother taping my ankle.
Yeah.
And I have to wear my shoes then?
No, no. You've got to wear Crocs. You got to wear something comfortable. Do what you wear barefoot in the house?
Yeah, I wish. That's slippers. The slippers.
But slippers have nothing on them.
I know.
Slippers are for old men.
Like I say.
Old men. Like old men wear slippers. You think anyone under the age of 30 wears slippers? Come on, Tom. Don't act your age.
800.
Go to REI or a sporting goods store and find something fun to wear around the house.
Okay, I'll do it. 800-462-7413. Before we go, Zorba, let's log into the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and take a quick question from PJ about the ill effects of eating certain fruits. PJ writes, "Dear Zorba, my daughter recently ate blueberries and her legs swelled up and turned blue. Something similar happens when she eats grapefruit. Is there a connection between the two? And what could be causing this?"
Well, the real issue is whether or not she has some sort of an allergy to the food. I mean, that's the issue that's there. So she might have an allergy to her food. I mean, there might be something going on with that, especially if it happens each and every time. So the answer is best to find out. Talk to your doc. You may have to go to an allergist. You may need some testing to see whether or not it's a food allergy. Strawberries, of course, are common. Blueberries, pretty unusual, but not unheard of. And that's what I would think may be the case. And if so, you might have to avoid the foods. But the other question is, are you having anything else with the blueberries that is actually causing it? Because if it's not the blueberry, is it something else? And basically, it needs to be evaluated. Mm.
Are you seeking a fruitful solution to a curious question? Just send your concern along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org. Or don't forget, we're also on Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Colburn. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1005Z. More information on Zorba his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.